What does true wellness mean to you? I'm Claudia Cometa, and that is the question I will be leading with in the Minding Wellness podcast. Each and every week, I will bring you experts who will share their personal wellness journeys and their insights into what it means to mind our wellness. Health is a state of body. Wellness is a state of being. Let's dive into improving our state of being. Welcome to the Minding Wellness Podcast. I am so excited to have Dr. Kara Pepper here with us today. She is a practicing internist and certified life coach from Atlanta, Georgia, who understands the joy and the stress of practicing medicine. She provides confidential coaching services to address all issues related to physician life. Her mission is to enhance wellness in busy physician lives, promote joy in the practice of medicine, and support colleagues in reaching their personal and professional goals. I loved our conversation, and I cannot wait to bring it to you. I am so excited to have Dr. Kara Pepper here with me today. I previously knew her as Kara Yaley back in the day, and we actually met back in undergrad at the University of Florida. My husband was in pre-med AMSA with her, and I remember, you know, just kind of fleeting details about that. But, you know, we were just chatting about how what stands out is sort of a campaign, you know, to be president and vice president. And I just kind of remembered a song using her name. And so I immediately remembered her when my husband brought her up, told me what she has been up to. And I said, can you please reach out to her and see if she would come on the podcast? And she has graciously agreed to be here. I can't wait to share her story. Kara, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So as I always start, the question is, what does true wellness mean to you?
I would say wellness, very simply to me, means having more than enough fuel in your tank to get you to any destination. There's a lot of different components to wellness for me: mental, emotional, spiritual, social, professional, relational, and of course, physical wellness. But all of those things don't happen by accident. You know, we can't go to the gym for one day and think that our bodies are going to be well, nor can we meditate for 10 minutes and think that our heart and minds are going to feel well either. It's an active practice every day to fill your tank, and that comes in a lot of different aspects of our lives and varies person to person. So, you know, for example, if your body was going through crisis, if you had a diagnosis like cancer, you know, you would rely on the other fuel tanks, like your emotional health and connectedness and spirituality, perhaps to weather that storm. Or if your teenager is going through crisis, you know, you're relying on other aspects of your own health to help weather that. So wellness for me is a comprehensive thing that, is a beautiful way of caring for yourself and others around you.
I so love that. And I just love hearing it. I haven't had a physician, and specifically a physician in your position, on here yet. So I just love hearing that from the provider standpoint. Just so, so great. Can you give us a brief background of where you've been and how you've come to where you are today?
It's kind of a long and winding road. you know, I grew up wanting to be a professional ballet dancer, went away and trained in Russia, and went away to boarding school and got a job dancing out of high school. And due to my own poor physical health, I was not able to keep dancing due to injuries. So I thought I was going to be a physical therapist and found my way to med school, in fact. Then from there, got through internal medicine residency and started a job in private practice. And for me, you know, I am your classic type A achiever. You know, I met many of my own goals, graduated from college and med school and residency, got married, had two kids, and I found myself 10 years in practice absolutely exhausted and burned out, because what I required of myself was not reasonable. That was my own issue to deal with. And the system of medicine that we're practicing in is pretty sick. So for me, trying to deliver the care that I felt the patients deserved, and meanwhile, take care of myself, those two things were not happening. So I ended up taking a sabbatical several years ago, and really, and that frankly was in the wake of my husband losing both of his parents. We just didn't have the reserve in our tank to weather that storm. And so I took a step back from work. He took a little step back, and we really just reprioritized what was important for both of us. And I'd spent a lot of time looking externally, thinking if I can just fix my work, or if I can just make my toddler sleep, or if I can just be more intimate in my marriage, or if I can just exercise more, then all these problems are going to go away and I'm going to feel better. But what I discovered was that I really just had to change me and really invest in my own personal wellness. And what I found was that I actually loved my job and I didn't want to leave it. And I love my husband and our marriage is great. And I love my children. And, you know, toddlers are toddlers sometimes. Mm-hmm. So in primary care, you know, people come to me with physical complaints, a large part of which is stress related. And I can't change people's health unless I change their behavior. And I can't change their behavior unless we address their mental and emotional health. And so I spend a lot of time coaching in my office. And I have a lot of physician patients who come to see me. And I realized that I was just doing a lot of coaching all day. You know, the medicine itself became kind of secondary to the real life mess that we were dealing with. So I ended up getting my life coach certification, and as of this year have started a passion project. I started my own business called Cara Pepper MD, and I'm life coaching all comers, but my target audience is physicians, because as it turns out, we're not doing it right either, and we need support from people who are credible and have been through it. And so I've really found my calling in that way. So that's how you and I got connected in this world of wellness.
It's so great to have you on, because as we were just chatting before we hit record, I was mentioning that, you know, I have had several conversations with either patients or, you know, people in the patient advocacy realm. And it is so wonderful to complete that circle and bring on a provider, a physician who is also speaking out on what is happening on that end, because this system is made up of many parts and we can't simply focus or end our focus on any one of them. So I just absolutely love that piece that you are taking that on and saw a need and went after it. And it is just such a beautiful thing to have a physician and provider not only speak out, but actually have a plan and implement a practice to help other providers. I don't know of any others doing that, and maybe there are, but I just had to have you on to talk about this because it's such an important piece. And I know, you know, I've written blogs about what ZDog MD said about the moral injury, and I think that the discussion is getting started, but there's so much more to dive into, and we need people on the front lines like you who understand from a very intimate perspective doing the work what other physicians need as far as help goes. From your website, I loved this, and it says, "Work-life balance felt impossible, completely unattainable, and I was exhausted. I was epically burned out, and no day at the spa or weekend getaway would bring me back to life. I needed restoration. I needed to prioritize myself as my important patient, my most important patient." Tell us a little bit more about this turning point. When did it reach a point of no return for you? And how did you begin to take, you know, what I kind of call for myself is imperfect action, because we aren't taught how to, you know, start a business, run a business. That's not something that is a class of ours, or, you know, some of us, you know, in the field maybe have gotten an MBA, but that's not something that most of us are skilled at. So kind of take us through that process of realizing the need and then getting started.
Yeah. Well, for me, it's personal, obviously, like I mentioned on the website. You know, I had at that time of no turning back, so to speak. I had two young children. You know, I was working 60 to 80 hours a week. My husband is a consultant who travels full time. So I was shouldering a lot of the you know, parenting at home alone. For me, you know, the way that I coped with stress, you know, your typical perfectionist personality is just, you know, to get busy doing the work. And, you know, what I see in the office all day is that when people don't feel well, they find ways to feel better. So some people smoke and some people drink and some people overeat and some people watch porn and some people, you know, are workaholics. And for me, like the work was my escape. It was a place where I felt good. I felt like I was adding value. I felt like I was helping people. And, you know, my practice grew very successfully, but it really got to a place where it was unmanageable. And frankly, that's because, you know, I was putting a lot of my emotional energy into work to avoid some of the conflict I was feeling personally. But then work became a burden and was affecting the personal life that I really valued. And so, you know, I'd asked for help in a number of ways. And frankly, I don't think I was really willing to accept the help that I was offered. And then crisis hit. And as I mentioned, when my husband's parents died very quickly, and our family just couldn't, I couldn't support him. My children were clearly upset. And, you know, I couldn't do the life that I was doing. And more importantly, it just felt, I mean, it was your classic burnout. It was, you know, depersonalization. It was lack of empathy. I just felt like I couldn't do this life anymore. And it, when I went to med school, it wasn't the life that I pictured where I was really making a difference in the world. So for me, I just had to submit to the fact that I had to restart my life and really look at what that looked like. So I took some time, which I think was a gift. That I took 6 weeks off, which at the time felt like
forever.
It felt like forever, and it was over in a blink of an eye. I could have taken 6 months or a year. I dug into, like, I got really up close and personal with my own mess. You know, I looked at how I was feeling. I looked at how I was behaving. I admitted to my faults, which as a physician is a very hard thing to do. I admitted I didn't have all the answers. And I really just kind of submitted to the fact that this was not the life that I wanted. And so digging into my faith, doing therapy, getting coaching, you know, turning back to my spouse who I love and really focusing on my family and friends was incredibly therapeutic for me. Meditation was very helpful. I've always exercised, you know, for me that was just another way to manage. And all that being said, for me, it really, I felt like I had no choice. I had backed myself into a corner and I had to do it. But the reaction I got from my peers was, "You're so brave. I wish I could do that too. I wish I could start my life in a different way. I wish I could have the courage to take some time." And I remember thinking, like, that there was such a discrepancy. Like, I certainly didn't feel brave doing any of that, but I felt it was necessary. And out of that has developed so many conversations with physicians and you know, extenders like nurse practitioners and VAs who are also shouldering a lot of emotional burden for our patients, that they say, you know, I want to live my life in the way that models wellness. And so it just started me down this road. And I don't know exactly what called me, I mean, at the time to do life coaching, but there was a prompt they asked me during some of the training, which was, "When was the last time you really felt like you were on fire? You were operating at 100%. You were, could not wait to wake up in the morning and do your job. You felt like you were really doing what you were called to do." And I had this just moment of clarity, like, oh my gosh, like, I don't remember the last time I felt like that. Like, maybe med school. I mean, it's been more than a decade since I felt like that. So really finding a way to help people who were in my position became a central focus of where I wanted to take my life at that point. And I'm still a practicing internist. I love taking care of patients, but I think taking care of physicians has such an enormous ripple effect for our patients that felt like where I was being called. So for me, coaching has just felt like everything I love about taking care of patients, frankly, without the hassle of our healthcare system. You know, it's the coaching, it's the interpersonal work, it's the encouragement, without the things that are distracting in the practice of medicine.
So powerful. And some of the things that you mentioned that really stand out to me, because, you know, clearly I'm in the medical field and I'm married to a physician, and I understand this from many levels. But, you know, some of the things you mentioned, as in 6 weeks of vacation, which I know as a wife of a physician, that doesn't happen. And you didn't have all the answers, which is not something that we in the medical profession, definitely not physicians, are really encouraged to say, right? We're supposed to be certain on so many levels, and uncertainty is not, it's not encouraged. It's not permitted in many circumstances. And so to even admit that is, it's not something that you're really encouraged or allowed to do. So it takes a lot of courage to get to the point to say, I don't have all the answers. And then, you know, submitting and surrendering, again, these are all things that are not really promoted in the profession. And so to, you know, you want to be able to just say that this is where I'm at, and I'm just going to be okay with it, and give that a voice, because so many other people want to be able to say that and they feel like they can't. So I'm just so grateful that you gave yourself a voice, which is in turn giving other providers and physicians a voice. It's so powerful. And we just really never understand or can ever fathom the impact of any one decision on our part. And I know for certain that this is going to have an impact on so many people. So I'm so grateful that you're doing this. What do you see as the largest stressor on physicians and other providers, either what you've noticed through your own practice or what you've seen as, you know, maybe other physicians you've talked to or seen as patients?
Yeah, the number one distractor from taking care of real life people is the computer that we're forced to interact with all day long. You know, as a part of our healthcare system, physicians and hospitals are required to have electronic medical records if we want to be compensated. And so that really has changed the focus and the delivery of healthcare in every field. And so instead of being having time at the bedside in the hospital or being able to sit down and really talk to your patients, we're having to not only just do the documentation of what the encounter requires, but reporting to the government. Studies out there that show for every hour you're in front of a patient, there's an additional hour of paperwork that's generated out of that. And a lot of that is because of our electronic medical records. So in an attempt to make us more efficient, it really has made us less efficient and less personalized in our delivery of care. And so for people who went into medicine because they want to take care of people, this is really demoralizing and really frustrating. And so if you're a patient, you've ever had a hospital encounter and you're like, the physician was only in the room for 5 seconds. I didn't get to talk to them. This is what they're doing. They're sitting in front of a computer outside in the hallway, typing away. So for me, that is the primary concern, in addition to just, you know, the insurance companies and trouble getting patients medications and reporting and, you know, making those things that are taking away from our time with patients.
I definitely have seen that, you know, I was assigned to be a super user in one of the implementations of an electronic medical system. And I just, you know, I've seen it. I know all of the things that go into, you know, on the primary care end, you know, internal medicine and primary care, there's so much charting that is the overwhelming issue. And you can't, you already are projecting into the future how much time all this charting is going to take, and how can you possibly be present with any one individual patient? And even as a patient, I know when I go, you know, everything is turned high tech, lower care, and the decision making on all of the tech is not typically coming from people on the front lines. And a lot of the input is not coming from them. It's coming from the tech people who, you know, are looking at it from a tech perspective, and it's very disjointed. And I completely agree with that from my own experience. And it's unfortunate because, you know, in an attempt to be more streamlined and efficient, we have lost what was intended, which is providers giving the care that they wanted to give when they were in, you know, medical school and had a idea of what that looked like. And it's just simply not that. What do you feel? And I know that you are familiar as well with, you know, Zadog MD and the moral injury. What is your take on that standpoint of this kind of being although we use the term burnout, and I do think in some ways that term has some validity, but in general, I do feel that, you know, as physicians, I've seen how strenuous your schooling is. And I, you know, I've been there through the school, the residency, all of it. And it does take a lot for you all to physically burn out because you've been through so much and your bodies have kind of been trained to be able to withstand a lot. So what is your take on, you know, the burnout versus moral injury debate?
It's a loaded question, but some people would describe it as like emotional guilt and shame or betrayal, anger, you know, all these feelings that will come up because we're not able to provide the care that we really want to deliver. It's for me, it's mostly just heartbreaking. You know, my colleagues love what they're doing. And when I talk to burnout physicians who frankly are in a place of reactivity to say, I'm so burned out, I'm just going to quit my job, I can't do this anymore. When you really get into it, you know, there's been layers and layers of stacking emotional trauma. You know, when we lose a patient, we don't forget those patients. You know, we think about them, they stay with us, we talk about them, but there is not a place to really decompress that emotional trauma. On the flip side of that, even when we feel like we're doing the best that we can, mistakes happen. You know, there's adverse outcomes from routine things that we don't expect. And we feel the guilt of that. We want things to go well. And so from a litigious standpoint, there's tremendous pressure for physicians. And then all of that coupled with the system that we're practicing in, which further exacerbates that, it's just really complicated. So my advice to my clients when they're struggling with these issues is to really get back to what drives them, what really fills them up, what really makes them feel like they're operating on all cylinders. And I would say a majority of the time, it still is practicing medicine. It's just finding a way to practice in a sustainable way where they are delivering the care that they want and being able to help people, which is why they went into the field in the beginning.
I think it's really powerful that, you know, you have noted a few times throughout this so far that, you know, it gets to a point where you start to approach the situation as, okay, this must be an obvious need that I need to change careers. And you've mentioned that some of your clients, you know, as providers feel like that might be the only way out. Maybe this is just not for me. You know, but then you have even said, you know, that you still had a deep love for your work and your patients. And I am guessing that that is probably the case for the majority, if not all of your clients, noting that, you know, it was you that needed to change and not necessarily your career. Can you kind of expand on, you know, that process? Because I think it's so important that you're having these conversations with other physicians, because we certainly don't want a mass exodus of great providers who have great intentions. As I mentioned often that they do, you know, this is not malintention on the provider side. You know, they went into this, you don't just jump into medicine. I mean, it is a commitment, and it would be tragic if we had mass exodus of amazing physicians. So, you know, how did you kind of come to that? Did you go through a struggle of, do I leave this career? And then how do you help others who are considering the same kind of refocus and reprioritize and revisit why they went into medicine to begin with?
All of those things. For me personally, it became understanding that I can't be everything to everyone. And that was my own personal stuff that I needed to work out. But I knew that if I couldn't help all the people I wanted to help, if I could just do a great job within limits, for me, that felt like success. A lot of it was reframing the way I look at things. And that's a lot of what I do in coaching. This is not like Pollyanna thinking. It's literally just looking at things in a new way. As a like neutral example, you know, weight management is something people come in to see me for all the time. So if I said, okay, here's a neutral situation, you weigh 200 pounds, there are people who would say, 200, I feel like a failure, what happened, that's so big, I don't like the way my body looks, there'd be a lot of emotional reaction and thoughts that come from that. And on the other end of the spectrum, I have patients who say, 200 pounds. I'm going to call my mom. I'm so excited. This is everything mm-hmm. I work for. You know, what a great thing. And the neutral fact is that the weight is exactly the same. And so in looking at our careers, the neutral fact is that we went into this to take care of people. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. Whether that's practicing medicine in a different way, changing medical practice, whatever, but really getting back to like, what is the thing that drives you? What is the thing that makes you come in? And I would say for most physicians, it's the relationship they have with their patients and the relationship they have with their colleagues. That is what sustains their career. And so finding a way to work within the system that you're in or change the system that you're in is really where a lot of the burnout work happens. If you look overall at what causes burnout, they think like 2/3 of it is, some people say 80%, but at least 2/3 of it is really the system issues. So finding a way to feel like you're making a positive impact on that is very helpful. And also just reframing, like, the work I'm doing is good work. The work I'm doing is beneficial. And finding a way to really change your thought process around that instead of being reactive and saying, I'm going to blow up my life or my marriage or move to the countryside or move to the beach. You know, mm-hmm. I had this eternal fantasy that I was going to move home to Florida and like open a bed and breakfast and become a yoga teacher. Like, all of those things are great and meaningful. But for me, that was just my litmus test of, wow, I'm really unhappy and I've got to fill myself up. And the more I turned inward and took care of myself, the better I was for the people around me, both personally and professionally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so important. And I love that you talked about, you know, things being, having a neutral, you know, it's a neutral fact, you know, and it's not the fact or what the truth is in front of us. It's the story we tell us about the truth, tell ourselves about the truth. And we can tell ourselves that 200 is not, you know, 200 pounds is not acceptable and makes me fat. Or we can tell ourselves 200 is a great, you know, amount of progress for me. And yeah, I mean, I love that take on it. And so important. And it's just so important that we, again, just remember the both sides of these equations. And, you know, the physicians are struggling as well. It's not that, you know, they're necessarily happy with the way things have gone. It's just the system is broken in so many pieces. And, you know, any one fix is going to be insufficient. So I'm really so glad that we're having these discussions. If you could change one thing about the medical system, and I know we've talked about the tech piece, so maybe outside of that, whether that be in from the medical school point or even pre-medical school point, through all the way through actual practice, what would you change, or what do you hope to see change, even if it's not necessarily started by you, but what do you hope to see change in the future?
I would say the biggest need, at least from my vantage point, from at the medical school, residency, fellowship, and practice level, is for physicians to continue to lean on each other. That means getting emotional support, great mentorship, equality, and opportunities. And I think there's plenty of lip service that's been done in the world of burnout or physician suicide or people leaving the practice of medicine. But really that gets started with our generation of physicians leading the people behind us and saying, we're not going to stand for this anymore. We are going to take care of each other. We are going to support each other. We are going to acknowledge that what we do is meaningful and powerful and also really hard. We're going to offer grace to each other and support to each other. And I think if we get started with that very early, I think the rates of suicide and medicine from medical school all the way into practice will hopefully decline, and that the culture of medicine will change. And I think once we as a community say, this is what we're willing to tolerate, there will be a lot of power that is generated to change the system in which we're operating. But from a patient standpoint, just knowing that, like, your physicians are people and we love what we do and we really are trying to do what's best. The personal connection between physicians and patients, I think, is really important and powerful. And making that connection with your physician is a great way to get great medical care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I do think that we could definitely improve on allowing vulnerability and connection and relationship rather than making, you know, medical school this,
survival of the fittest, and nobody speaks of being tired, or, you know, it's just this whole, I know that it's improved, you know, because, you know, certainly we're working fewer calls and the call hours are less. And so we're attempting on a certain level to improve that, but there's still not, I don't think, enough open discussion, because it sounds like somebody's weak if they do. So that's really still not, I don't think, anywhere near where it needs to be. So I think what you're doing is so important, and starting to have these discussions, and for the newer generations to know that it's okay for you to start having these conversations, you know, talk to a mentor, get the help that you need, instead of falling into that trap of trying to be a martyr, because we all are humans, and achieving the great accomplishment of getting an MD does not then make you, you know, immortal. And I mean, it's not this transformation into this other being. So I think we all just could remember that, and it would be super helpful. What does working with you look like from a physician standpoint? You know, you helping, what does it kind of look like? You know, how are people finding you? What does maybe a session look like? And then after that, where can people find you?
Yeah. So the easiest place to find me is social media or via my website, which is Kara Pepper MD. Website's karapeppermd.com. So when I'm contacted by a physician, we will schedule a 15-minute just introductory chat. How are you? Where are you? What do you want to get out of this? And then if we feel like it's the right fit, if I feel like they're motivated for coaching, then we start with our sessions. Usually they are spaced out every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, depending on what they're dealing with and the scope of the problem. And then we do basically an assessment. Where are you in terms of what you want to address? What does that look like? And then I do a lot of thought modeling and coaching to help people get unstuck, to make progress, work towards goals that they want to work towards, and just help clarify the life that they are working towards. And depending on what people want to address, you know, in the past month, that's been, I feel like someone's destroying the culture in my practice. What should I do? I feel anxious. How can I manage that? I feel totally depleted when I get home and I have nothing left for my family. I'm dating the wrong people. You know, like whatever a person in medicine would run up against, you know, these are the things that we're addressing. So that is really so much fun for me and brings me so much life. And I think we support each other in that way. It's just really, really rewarding.
And I just love that, you know, thinking about a physician, you know, seeking that help elsewhere, I could see how at some point in a conversation with a coach, they may think, okay, well, you don't really understand what I'm dealing with. And that's not the case with you, because you do. And they know that. And so they know they can have very frank conversations with you. And I think that is just so powerful. And it's something that is so needed. And so I am so grateful for this conversation, for all of the work that you do. I will put in this show notes all of your links, but I did just want you to mention those so people have them. And I look forward to following your work. And I'm just so, so grateful for you, for this time, and for your presence and you know, impact in the physician community. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Kara. We will talk soon.
Thank you so much for joining me on this episode of the Minding Wellness Podcast. I truly enjoyed my conversation with Dr. Kara Pepper and look forward to more conversations on this super important topic. If you enjoyed this episode or any previous episode, I would greatly appreciate it if you would take a minute to give me a review on iTunes. I so appreciate you continuing to follow these important topics and conversations with my guests, and I can't wait to see you here again next time.